I'm Carol Cohn, and welcome to Purpose 360, the podcast that unlocks the power of purpose to ignite business and social impact. Today, we have a company coming back with a different CEO, Ella's Kitchen. Joining us is Mark Kittigan, and he has been at Ella's for over 10 years, taking over the reins when the company sold to Hanes Celestial in 2013. Ella's is an amazing baby food company started by Paul Lindley, and we interviewed Paul, a passionate social entrepreneur, at the earliest days of Purpose 360, and we're going to put a link to that podcast in the show notes here. We were very curious about what's happened to Ella's over the time, what's happened in the past 3 years now that Mark is truly, his leadership has kicked in a lot, and also what's happened to the company during the pandemic, what's happened to their purpose at the center of commitment to truly helping babies and toddlers have a better relationship with food from their earliest years, from when they start eating solid food, or in the UK, they call it weaning. And we're going to hear how Mark has put his handprint on the company and allowed it to continue to flourish in a way that I know Paul Lindley would be proud, in a way that the company has continued to grow massively, but it's grown in a dual commitment, a new direction, truly that's a passion of Mark's, is the B Corp movement. They're a B Corp that was established under Paul Lindley, but truly it's not just about the company and how it's run, but it's also how Mark will talk about that the B Corp movement is an absolute necessity and that business must drive solutions to planet, people, and our environment and society. And he feels truly that good business must lead. And he's going to talk about the advocacy that the company is doing with the British Parliament and government to try and help pass. There's an act that is being pushed forward, and it's called the Better Business Act, that truly would create legislation that would require UK companies to not only stand for shareholders, but also for stakeholders, very much following in the stakeholder-based capitalism movement in the United States. And so that's part of our conversation, but he's also going to talk about the continuation of the incredibly fun ways that Ella's gets involved with parents via they've got a great new campaign called Eat, Play, Love. And how kids really at an early age, if they touch their foods, especially vegetables in their raw state, and they play with them, and then they give permission to just do all sorts of fun things, that they'll have a better relationship with vegetables, especially as they grow up. And that's critically important because over 30% of UK children, by the time they're getting older, they are obese or overweight, and that is something that's going to have a huge impact on their future life, on society, on government programs, etc. So the company is truly still committed to helping children have a better relationship with food. There's another part of this conversation that is so great, and it's about Mark's management style. And he learned it from a book called Turn the Ship Around. It is about allowing your team leads. So the head of marketing is accountable for the plan and the results, and so on and so on. The people managers, the supply chain managers, the sales folks, they create the plans, they're responsible for them. And this autonomy that Mark manages to creates exceptional results in the company. So this is a great conversation. I'm thrilled that 3 years later, we're back talking about Ella's Kitchen. It's just an intriguing conversation, and one that is also helpful for our listeners who may be contemplating a sale to another company because so they can scale and grow, and how you can maintain and keep your purpose at the center, your ethos, and work with your parent company in harmony. So let's get into our conversation with Mark. First, I just want to welcome you to the show, Mark.
Oh, hi. Well, thank you very much for having me, Karen. It's a pleasure to be here.
And tell me where you're sitting. I know you're in your home, but tell me where you are today.
I'm at the top floor of our house in Shepherd's Bush in West London in the UK. I've got my puppy behind me, so hopefully she's going to be quiet throughout the podcast. So fingers crossed.
And if you could see this puppy, it's a beautiful. Is she a giant? What is she? Her name's Dandelion.
Her name's Dandelion, named by my youngest daughter, who's 10. She is a golden doodle. I have to be honest, she has changed our lives. Absolutely amazing.
Okay, so maybe at the end of this conversation, you're going to talk about some new dog food in addition to Ella's. And so, again, welcome to the show. Very early on into the podcast, in January 2019, I had the wonderful opportunity to interview Paul Lindley, and Paul was the founder of Ella's. And we had a wonderful conversation. We're going to link it into our show notes. But Mark has been CEO for a number of years, but he also is at the company since 2011. So this is going to be a really interesting conversation about how Paul Lindley, the founder, influenced Mark, how the purpose of Ella's, which we will dive into in a minute, continues to this day, but it has now Mark's hand on it. And also, Mark, let's just talk a little bit about who is Ella's Kitchen, because some of our listeners may not have children or young ones. And so let's just explain a little bit about the company and then about your background.
Yeah, sure. So Ella's Kitchen, as you said, was founded by Paul actually 16 years ago. And was named after Paul's eldest daughter, Ella. And he started the company after he had struggled to get Ella to eat solid foods when she was a baby. And he found that by using sight and sound and, well, all of the senses, he was able to get Ella to start eating. And that really was the sort of the start of the idea of forming Ella's Kitchen for Paul. Because Paul believed, and we all believe now, that all of us, including babies, eat with all of our senses. And it's still the driving force for us today at Ella's Kitchen. So we're also founded with a purpose that is related to children's health and nutrition. So the point of the company is not simply to make money. And that has been our kind of, people call it their North Star. And it has remained, you know, ever since that sort of 16 years ago when Paul started the company. We're now the number one baby food company in the UK. And we also distribute to over 30 markets around the world.
Your parent company is Hain's Celestial Group in the United States. And interestingly, Paul sold the company in 2013. You know, in our previous conversation, he really wanted to grow and to really be a force in the U.S. He felt that he needed the backing. And so we'll get into that in a minute, because it looks from the evolution of the company that you didn't miss a beat. That Hain's certainly allowed you to be quirky and funny and to grow. And so let's just talk a little bit about, you've got some kids. And so how did having children, especially as you were growing up through the company, how did that impact your knowledge and your management philosophy?
Well, so you're right. So I've been at the company 10 and a half years, and I've been CEO for ever since Hain bought the company. So that's about 9 years ago. And so I naturally gravitated, I think, towards the baby food industry because I had a baby at the time and we had another one on the way. So it just felt like a natural place for me to go. I've been in consumer goods all of my life since leaving university at 22. So it just kind of felt like home to go to a baby food company. And I met Paul. And I spoke to him, and having worked in business all my life, it's going to Ella's Kitchen has literally changed my life. It has changed my whole philosophy around what business, I would argue, should be doing, you know, the very purpose of business. And Paul kind of opened my eyes to all of this, and it's transformed me, and it's just been the best thing I've ever done.
Well, that's very clear, and we're thrilled that you're continuing to evolve this company with its very special ethos. And so I want to just step back a bit because your food focuses a lot on weaning. And so for those of our millennials who haven't had children or such or others, can you explain what weaning is and why and how you approach that with your food, with your advertising?
So it has a different name in the US to the UK. So when babies start their journey of eating food for the first time in the UK, that journey is called the weaning journey. In the US, it's called starting solid foods. Okay. They're the same thing. They're just called something slightly different.
I think it sounds better in the UK.
Yeah. Well, it sounds a little bit more like a sort of journey, doesn't it? The weaning journey.
Right.
But those are the two differences. It's just it's just a name, I suppose.
You really have a big concentration on vegetables. And you see that, for example, Gerber or, in our country, they might have a broader category. So you really focus not only on the quality and the texture and the taste, but also on the communications and having an entire ecosystem approach to helping parents understand the weaning journey.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, what we really focus on, if I'm being honest, Carol, is our mission. So our mission at Ella's is to improve children's lives through developing healthy relationships with food. And you mentioned vegetables. So let's take vegetables because it's a really good example. So a number of years ago, we commissioned a huge piece of research with the British Nutrition Foundation, which is an independent body, to look at all weaning, solid foods, if you're in the US, studies that have been done all over the world. And we were able to prove, and this might sound a really obvious thing, but it had never been proved before, a really, really simple thing. That when you start giving your baby food for the first time, so when you start solid food for the very first time, if you start with vegetables right at the beginning, both in frequency and variety, it will have a material impact on that child's vegetable intake when they're 1 year old, 2 year old, 3 year old, 4 year old, and 5. They will eat more vegetables. It's a proven fact from the studies that we looked at, which is amazing. But at the time in the UK, at that time, the UK government, through the various different bodies in the UK, were recommending to parents, when you start giving your child, your baby, solid foods, mash down a bit of fruit. We say, well, no, you should mash down a bit of vegetables. And we had this whole campaign around changing the guidelines from the UK government. We marched on the Houses of Parliament with children. We delivered a massive greener paper to the Department of Health. We engaged our retailers. We launched new products. We dropped the price of those products, not as a promotion, forever, because we understood that we needed to nudge consumers, our parents, towards buying it. So we did it so much so that we lost money in all of the vegetable SKUs that we were selling. But we did it because we have this mission and we'd proven something and we wanted to get behind it. And after a few years, we were successful in getting the UK government to change the guidelines. And it may sound like a simple thing, but these things, they really, really matter, especially at the moment when we're looking at the obesity rates in the UK, which tragically have jumped like they've never jumped before throughout COVID. Nobody really understands why, but we're at a stage now in the UK where nearly 30% of all children entering reception age, so that is 4 years old turning to 5 years old, 30% are obese or overweight. Mm. In the UK, all government intervention policies around obesity start at 5 years old. And our viewpoint in this is,
it's too old.
We think that's maybe a little bit too late.
Right. And it's wonderful that the company has always taken an ecosystem approach to its products, that it's not that you're just selling products, as you just discussed. It's about the essence of the products and how can you contribute to the knowledge of parents, to the regulation of government, to, health recommendations, that truly there is a healthier way for children to have a greater relationship with the foods they eat that will then have an impact. I love when Paul said, if we don't change the system, we're going to have this giant obesity problem, which is going to be a health problem, which is going to impact people's lives and jobs and success in life. And it's just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So it's fantastic that you have this approach, again, the ecosystem approach, advocacy. So can you tell a story, I'm sure you've got many, where you hear from parents that are saying, you know, thanking you for taking this approach and really understanding that Ella's is more than just a product?
There are only two reactions I have when I tell somebody I work at Ella's Kitchen. And it happened to me the other day when I was in the back of a London cab. It's either, I haven't heard of, you know, what do you do? I've never heard of Ella's Kitchen. And that's when people haven't had kids. Or it's, oh my God, you work at Ella's Kitchen. And people genuinely come like, this cabbie stopped the cab and went, oh, that's amazing. Can I take a picture? I'm no one famous. Why? That's just weird. Why do you want to take a picture of me? But I think the stories, we know the stories are out there. And we're talking before about, you know, the ecosystem and stuff. And I think it actually goes more to the core of what the very purpose of the business is. So when the pandemic hit, well, you know, we did two things actually, which I was just super, super proud of. The first thing we did is before furlough was even a word that we understood, you know, we've got everybody on the phone. And bear in mind, over half of the people that work at Ella's Kitchen are parents. I got everyone on the phone at Ella's and said, no matter how much work you are able to do for the duration of the pandemic, you will get paid in full. I expect if you have children or dependents at home, the absolute priority is them. If you can do no work whatsoever, that's absolutely fine. They are the priority. All I ask is you let your manager know so we can reassess what things that we don't need to do, you know, we're going to have to drop, basically. And the second thing we did, you know, you talked about the stories, is we quickly realized, because in the UK, there was massive, massive panic buying in shops. The shops were stripped bare of all products, including ours. And we quickly realized that the charities that rely on the food banks, that rely on donations from companies like us, didn't have any products. So we prioritized them over everything else. We gave away 1 million pouches to the most vulnerable children in society. So there are stories out there, but I know they're out there because we're doing the right thing.
That's fantastic. You got ahead of me on the pandemic response, but those are two very, very distinctive responses. And so thank you very much. So you became CEO when Hain Celestial acquired the company. We just did an interesting conversation with Ben & Jerry's and with Chris Miller, who's their head of activism. And he just basically said when they sold to Unilever, that they actually wrote a covenant into the sales document. And I'm just curious, to protect Ben & Jerry's, because they're so unique in their own way as well. Very, very, very purpose-driven, mission-driven and such. Did you have any sort of ways to protect this incredible brand with Hain? Just curious to give that guidance and insight to any other purpose-driven entrepreneur here who may be thinking of selling, but they want to keep the purpose going.
What a great idea to put in the sale document. We didn't have anything like that. So if I'm honest, it was the source of my greatest concern and something that I was quite anxious and probably at the time got quite stressed about, because Ella's Kitchen is just so important to me. It's just more than a passion in my life. It's, you know, it's one of the loves of my life. And I thought, what's going to happen? What is going to happen to all the work that we do with regards to our mission that really doesn't pay back from a commercial point of view at all? What's going to happen to the values-based culture that we built up at Ella's Kitchen? What's going to happen with regards to all the good work we do from a sustainability point of view? And it was my biggest source of stress, if I'm honest. And the thing that I had been, one of the things I've been most proud of since I've been at Ella's, is the fact that the reverse has happened. So we have influenced and impacted and changed them much more than they have us. So we lead them with regards to sustainability. We've led the group with regards to B Corp certification. So I would say, you know, if you have a great company, you should be looking to inspire and change the mothership. The other way in which, if I'm being brutally honest, that we've managed to get like real autonomy is our results have been fantastic. And you know, the reason why the results have been fantastic is because we've got a great team. We have autonomy. We can talk about that in a second, that runs throughout the team. We want values. All those other, there are lots of reasons why we've been successful. But that success breeds the autonomy from Hain Celestial, because they're thinking, well, we need to leave you alone, which is brilliant.
Well, and it's smart on their part. So you, I saw that you also had, you had two hats that you're wearing. When you also have a sustainability hat, and I would love to hear how that's working, both for Ella's, as well as how, as you said, you're influencing the parent. Do tell.
We work really, really hard to be open, honest, transparent about the journey that we're on. And I kind of liken it to this circle that goes around. The more successful we are commercially, the more money we make, the more product that we sell, the more good we can do. And is another thing that I've been most proud of since Paul left the company, and you know, I think you'd agree with this, is we are doing more good than we've ever done before. So we're stronger when it comes with regards to our mission. We're stronger when it comes to sustainability. And that is something, this continuous improvement is something that I'm absolutely focused and passionate about. We can never do enough. So we're always pushing ourselves to do as much as we can.
So you can see how it really drives you when you get up in the morning. I have to do more. I have to grow. Let's talk about two of the areas that you really love. And let's talk about B Corp certification. And just to let you know that when I was at Edelman, I had the wonderful opportunity for Andrew and his partner at B Lab to publicize when they were approved in Delaware in the United States. Because when your certification is approved in Delaware, that's it. Then you become truly a standard. And lovely, lovely men. And of course, I followed the B Corp movement for a very long time. You are very, very committed to it and to its growth. So can you talk about why it's important? By the way, I had Chris Marquis, who's an old friend from Harvard, on the show, probably the last year, talking about his book about the B Corp movement. So, and I know that you know him well. So why is it so important that this should continue to grow? And how has it evolved since you became a B Corp at Ella's?
So why is the B Corporation movement important? I would say it's absolutely essential. So if you look at the social and environmental issues that we have right now and we have coming towards us, if business isn't part of the solution, and I would argue if business isn't driving the solution, we have absolutely no chance of achieving it. So at the moment, you know, we in the UK, we have Boris Johnson as our prime minister. And a lot of people look to the government to solve, let's take the climate issue, which is obviously a worldwide issue. A lot of people are looking to government to solve these issues. And you know, I always argue, when you're talking about government, who do you mean? Do you mean Boris Johnson? Do you mean the Conservative Party? Do you mean all MPs, the House of Westminster, the House of Lords? Who are these magical, mystical people that are going to solve all of these problems? Because I promise you, when they say, we need to be net zero by 2050. Who do they mean by we? Primarily, it's businesses. I mean, there's a lovely quote from Barack Obama, that we are the first generation of leaders that won't be able to look back and say, we didn't know. Gone is the day that CEOs of companies and directors of companies will be able to look their children in the eye and say, well, we didn't know. No, we all know. We don't need to be told by the government what we need to do. We need to run our businesses in a different way. And if we prioritize profit over everything else, we have no chance of social justice. We have no chance of economic justice. And we have no chance when it comes to the climate crisis. So the good businesses need to stand up now and lead other companies with them. And I've never come across anything I'm sure there will be in the future, which is fantastic, like the B Corporation movement, where the certification allows you to stand up and lead other companies to follow your lead. And I know I'm sounding a bit wordy, and if my wife was here, she'd be rolling her eyes and going, oh, God, it's banging on again. But I genuinely believe that. I believe that we can't wait around. And the B Corporation movement, it has one aim. It's just one aim. It is, how can we change how we measure success in business? Because right now, as a, you know, I work for a division of a PLC, a NASDAQ listed company. My fiduciary duty, believe it or not, Carol, I got one aim. It's really nice and simple. Maximize shareholder return. Now, when you say that out loud to people, yeah, but you know, you don't really do that. No, I don't do that. But that actually is what I should be doing, is maximize shareholder return above everything else. It's not fit for purpose. And we need business leaders to stand up and make the change. It's as simple as that for me.
When you say maximize shareholder return, because you and I both know about the shift to stakeholders, I'm assuming that you believe that to maximize shareholder return, you need to maximize return to all stakeholders. And when you do that, then the profits will follow. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the frustrating things. If you run your company for all stakeholders, I would argue that however you measure the success of that company, you will be more successful.
I'm curious, are you familiar with Interface, which is a B2B carpet company?
Yeah, we have their tiles in the barns where we work.
Excellent. Well, I had the wonderful opportunity to interview them. Unfortunately, I didn't, you know, Ray Anderson passed away many years ago, but often in my speeches, I just talk about his vision about finding another way. And how that company just took off with, you know, making carpet tiles. I mean, it seems like something that is so mundane, but it truly changed not only them, it changed the industry, it changed, you know, how to look at net zero, then net positive. Again, I'll just say to my listeners, it's a great, great conversation. So, as this one is too, let's continue with the advocacy, because I would love you to talk about the Better Business Act. Because you've been taking what is that? And then what are the actions that you're taking? Because again, you're trying to create an ecosystem to get others engaged in the same philosophies that you have.
Yes. So the Better Business Act we're trying to change UK law, not just for a few companies or certain companies or certain industries. We're trying to change a section, it's actually called Section 172 of the Companies Act. We're trying to change it for every single company in the United Kingdom. And at the moment, put simply, that section describes the very purpose of businesses in the UK. And at the moment, it is to maximize shareholder return. And we want to put an addendum and change it and change that to all stakeholders. So CEOs and directors of all companies will have a duty when making major decisions to take all stakeholders into account. And it would be huge. It would be the UK leading in this sphere. And it would be a cultural change that would happen. But it's very interesting. We've spoken to a lot of CEOs in companies, Carol, with PLCs, who are unable to publicly commit to supporting the act, but are desperate for it to pass, and have spoken to MPs to say, we would like this to be passed because at the moment we are forced to make decisions that we don't agree with. And if this act were to pass, we believe we could run our businesses better. And it would be better for all stakeholders. But at the moment, short term, you know, not even quarterly, it's monthly reporting. What are you going to do about, you know, you can't have this long-term planning. As you know, Paul Polman, one of the things he did when he took over Unilever was to get rid of the quarterly reporting because he said it drives the wrong behavior. Well, if you've got monthly reporting, how does that work? So it needs to change. And there are over 1,000 companies now that have signed up to support it. We're going to have a day in Parliament on the 20th of April when we're going to be talking to all MPs. And we would love, absolutely love, to get the act in the Queen's speech later in the year. And then obviously to get it passed, because it would be absolutely monumental. It'd be huge news. But when you say all CEOs, all directors should take account of all stakeholders in running the business, how can you argue against that? Who can say, well, no. It should all be about the money. You shouldn't care about the people that work for you or the impact that your products have on society. It's like, of course you should.
Have you looked at the, because the Business Roundtable in the United States, you know, that they came out with their declaration about, and now this isn't a law, but it was a declaration over about 200 of leading companies here that said that we must look at stakeholders now, not just shareholders. So you might want to, I don't know if you've analyzed that or maybe talk to some of the leaders there, that might give you a little bit more momentum.
Yeah, we replied to that. So B-Lab USA replied to that, saying, let's get to work. And I found I'd never met a CEO who hasn't claimed that their business isn't saving the world. And my challenge to that will always be, okay, we'll take this free test. Because I believe that if you're not independently verified by somebody else, how can you prove that your business is actually great? So it's brilliant that people are making these proclamations. They need to follow it up, I would say, with that real action of, well, how are you measuring that you are for all stakeholders? Because it's all going to be slightly different. And then how are you inspiring your suppliers to follow you?
And speaking of suppliers, that's a great segue, that you are currently aiming for 50% of your supply chain to be B Corporation compliant in the next few years. So how are you doing that? How are you approaching conversations and with your supply chain partners?
So we're forcing them to... No, I'm joking.
Okay.
We are... Asda once said this to me, actually. We want to do business with people we like doing business with. And I want to do business with people that see the world the same as us. So we have taken the B Corporation philosophy to all of our partners and look to inspire them. We ask them to fill out a mini assessment, a mini impact assessment from B Corp. We can then look at that assessment. We can de-risk ourselves. We can look at where suppliers are doing well, where they're not doing well. We can then give them a free sustainability plan of how they can make their business better and stronger. And we would argue with them, you know, we would say to them, we think this is, if you're any interested in money, we think this will make your business stronger from a commercial point of view. So it's down to the team, not me, to persuade our suppliers. Our cleaning company is now a B Corp. Our stationery company is a B Corp. Our Spanish manufacturer took 3.5 years to become a B Corp. They've changed their entire business. They've now got solar panels on the roof. They harvest the rainwater. They have a creche to enable young parents or parents to return to work. They've changed the diversity and gender of their board and senior team. They've changed their entire company to get the 80 points they needed to. Our creative agency, Habas London, they're part of one of France's largest companies. They're part of a network of companies that's probably one of the biggest marketing agencies in the world. They certified 3 years ago, and I went to their unveiling with their team, and I said, this is one of the proudest moments, not of my working life, of my life, because the unintended consequences from you certifying are going to be huge. And now other parts of the network have certified, and they've got Universal Music who are interested, and it's how it happens. And the stories from how it's changed people's lives are extraordinary. So I'll give you one. So Habas, there was a lady that worked on the team, the B Corp team, Habas in London, and her husband worked in a local state school, so a government school in King's Cross, which is a relatively deprived part of London. And he was talking to his wife one day and saying, you know, he was quite depressed. He was saying, my kids' grades aren't going up. And she was saying, well, what are the reasons behind it? And he said, believe it or not, some of them have got nowhere to do their homework. So if they go home, there's no table for them to sit at and do their homework. So she went in the next day and was talking to people at Havas and went, well, we've got this big open space downstairs. And then they started talking to other companies, like I think like Google, who are around them in King's Cross. And they got a whole group of companies together and said, look, will you give space for 100 kids once every 2 weeks after school for them to come in, sit down, do their homework, give them some cookies, give them some orange squash, have maybe one person invigilating so they don't go crazy. Are you up for that? And they've set it up. And guess what? The grades of kids in the school have gone up since then. It's not costing the companies anything because it was spare space. It's this mentality of like, how do we improve the lives of people that work around us? And guess what? Everybody in the business wants to go and invigilate and say hi to the kids and help them out and work on other projects and they're helping them creatively. And it's like, this is what we're built to do as human beings. And I could give you loads of other stories, you know, some of them that really, really emotional about how it brings change. But you know, specifically, we're 100 people that work in Barnes just outside Henley. We've probably got a million people, Carol, that work in our supply chain. I would say we've got a opportunity, but more than that, a responsibility to try and improve all of their lives. And if we can persuade all of our partners to become B Corps, we will have achieved that. And I think that's amazing.
That is amazing. And your passion and your vision for this is just quite profound. You've got the passion for the B Corp and for having an ecosystem that's going to have more and more and more impact, as well as your purpose to help children eat at an early age, have a better relationship with food. So how do you balance those two? They're both very strong. And any suggestions to our listeners, like when you've got two parts of your purpose, how you can make sure that you don't favor one child over the other?
That's a really good question. I'll give you an example where it is really, really difficult. And that is our commitment to becoming a net zero business by 2030. So to become, you know, we've looked at our entire supply chain, scope one, scope two, scope three. We've measured where all our impact is. And because of the products that we produce, so we have protein, so chicken, meat, and fish, in some of our SKUs, they are very carbon intensive to produce. They have a big impact on the planet. So on the one hand, we would like to reduce those and maybe get rid of them because that will help us on our quest to become a net zero business, which is better for the environment. On the other hand, we have our mission, which is to do with children's health and nutrition. And at that early stage, children in their diet need specific things. And as an organic food company, we're not allowed to put any additives into our products and still call them organic. So this is something that we haven't sorted out. We know we're going to, but at the moment we don't have a fix for. So that's a very sort of live issue where the two kind of clash up against each other.
I'm just curious about how you make those two work. What physically do you do? Do you have like two different groups of people and, you know, one's working on the supply chain and helping them to become more sustainable? And then you've got one working on all the health and nutritional parts. I mean, how do you physically create those teams within Ella's?
So if you look at sustainability, I think pretty much every single team at Ella's Kitchen will have a goal, a KPI, a personal KPI, which is set against some part of our sustainability strategy, some goal that we want to achieve. With regards to our mission, it sits with a couple of teams, I would say. They're never, apart from the net zero example I gave you before, they normally work with each other, which is fantastic. And if I really try and boil it down, and this might sound a bit simple, but the challenge to all of us is always to do the right thing.
Let's pivot a bit to you've got a new campaign that's called Eat, Play, Love. And it is, again, it's in that wonderful history of Veg for Victory. And we're going to put we'll link those videos into our show notes. But talk to me about the new campaign, and the spot is riot. You might want to talk about that when you shot it, and the kids have just got, they've got food all over their face, and they're so cute, and they're so little.
Well, I've got to say, I'm chuffed a bit that you liked it, because I am super, super excited, and this is just the first part of a sort of long campaign that we're going to run. So everything that we do at Ella's Kitchen is from a child's perspective. We call it simply being kids first. So I'm sure we all know the rule that when we used to grow up and probably talk to our own kids is this, don't play with your food.
No.
But whose benefit is that? I mean, we're not saying, by the way, before anybody starts screaming at their radio, all the old days would be radio now with your iPhone.
Right.
We're not saying throw your food against the wall. We're absolutely not saying that. But whose benefit was that really for when we say to babies, don't play with your food, or toddlers, don't play with your food? Because we conducted a study with toddlers, and we were able to prove that when you allow babies to play with vegetables in their raw form, so in the afternoon, they're at nursery, if you give them the raw vegetables and they are able to play and explore with them, they are much more likely to eat those vegetables later in the day for their tea. Now, neophobia, which sounds like a great word, but it's a fear of new food. And it is something, it is a great word, isn't it?
It's a great word. I never heard of it.
Neophobia. That's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very cool.
So neophobia is the fear of new foods, and it's something that particularly impacts children. So allowing kids to be kids, to explore food with all of their senses, is really, really important. For them growing up with a healthy relationship with food.
And just talk a little bit about the spot, because it's really, really cute. I mean, it's I'll see if I can give it a little bit of its due. I mean, you've got, all of a sudden you've got the scene, and it's like, it's a museum, you know, and don't touch anything in the museum. And then you see these little kids toddling in, trotting in, whatever, of all sizes and shapes. And there's this beautiful, looks like a sculpture. And it says, don't play with food. And it's made of vegetables, right? And then all of a sudden, the camera starts looking at the kids. And all of a sudden, the kids are just popping all of these tomatoes and carrots and into their mouths and squishing. I love the squishy part. You always say squish, you know, and into their little tummies. I love the language for Ella's. It's great. And so you don't know what's happening. And then all of a sudden, the camera pulls back. And it comes and it says, do play with food. It's wonderful. We're going to put a link to it. Were you there at the shoot, by the way? It must have been a lot of fun.
No, I couldn't go. Some of my team went because of COVID. I mean, it didn't have COVID at the time, but the restrictions were quite severe. And me turning up just because I was interested and wanted to see it wasn't an option. So I didn't have a purpose to be there apart from being nosy. So the team just said, you got to wait for the video. It was taken in a museum. And, well, I'm just really glad you liked it, because I think it's absolutely great and one of the best bits of work.
The kids are great. But when you let them really play. The other thing I want to just talk with our listeners about is that you do something that's kind of counter-cyclical to your business. You've got a lot of guidance for parents to, like, cook your own food, and which you'd say, well, why would you do that? Because you're trying to sell it. Can you talk a little bit about, like, you've got these really cute videos and guidance, and how do you introduce and why you would even do something like that?
I guess it goes back to where we started the conversation, in that not everything for us starts with money. We see ourselves as being a service to parents. We are here to help them on what can be quite a stressful and anxious period. Feeding your baby for the first time can come with quite a lot of anxiety when they don't eat, for example. So yes, we have things that you would say are counter to the commercial part of selling baby food. We have cookbooks, which don't really make us any money, but we absolutely love them. We have videos on how to do it yourself. This is all part of our service. We don't see ourselves as simply a baby food business.
The thing that just popped into my mind was Patagonia. You know, it's like we exist to save the planet. And then all of the, when you have a higher order purpose, think of it as a giant, like, you know, umbrella, then you, a giant that you can so many things creatively underneath it, whether it's product innovation, employee engagement, supply chain engagement and such, that you create, as you said, brand love.
Yeah, because it comes from a place of authenticity. There's a truth behind it. So we like, we always talk about it internally being one brand inside and out. And if you're not, the truth will out. I mean, your team are going to think that. And when I think people more and more, they just want two simple things from work, and they're both based around pride. I think people want to have pride in the company that they work for. And increasingly that means, you know, to be able to go into the pub or go home to your parents and you genuinely come alive when you say, I work for such and such a company and we do X, Y, Z. And I don't think you can have real pride if that X, Y, Z is just about making money. It has to be something else. And the second thing, which you know, you talked about right at the beginning about the handprints that I would have liked to leave at Ella's Kitchen. This is the thing that I really hold my, if I had a hat, I would hold my hat on this, is pride in the work that you do. I don't think you can have pride in the work that you do if you don't have autonomy in your role. And it is the thing that my overriding, I suppose, if I had some sort of business philosophy that I wanted to leave at Ella's Kitchen, it would be, I want every single person actively, independently making decisions themselves every single day. It relies on communication, or communicating to your manager what you're doing, otherwise you get chaos. It relies on clarity of what we're trying to achieve, relies on lots and lots of things, but then putting through autonomy in the business has enabled us to be the success we are. And I'll just say, about 5 years ago, I made a vow not to make another single decision in the business, not one.
Interesting. Interesting. So you're saying singularly that you'll make decisions with others? Is that what that meant or no?
No. So if you're in charge of marketing at Ella's Kitchen, you're reporting to me. You're the boss. You can come to me. We'll have a chat about things. I'll give you my advice. But at the end of the day, it's your call. You're in charge. And that philosophy and that culture eventually starts to seep through. And it's just the way I shouldn't be making any decisions. And I was inspired by a man who's become a sort of friend. He's called David Marquez. He's written the best business book I've ever read. It's called Turn the Ship Around. And he did this in an American nuclear submarine. So if he can do it in a failing American nuclear submarine, I think anybody can do it in a baby food business. He turned this nuclear submarine around. You know, he ripped up the rule book and probably could have gone to jail for doing so. And it's really inspiring about how he instilled autonomy. And he talks about it and says, I don't care how great a captain you are. If you came across my submarine after I'd been there for 2 years, you wouldn't have stood a chance. Because on my submarine, you've got over 200 people actively making decisions, experts in their area. In every other submarine from every other country, you've got one man making every single decision. Because you don't stand a chance. And 2.5 years after he took over, the USS Olympia, they got assessed by the Navy and they got the highest marks ever recorded, not of submarines, not of the North Atlantic Fleet, ever recorded in US naval history. So for me, I took that as a real inspiration of, you know what, we're going to do the same thing. And what you do when you do it properly in a business is you create a whole generation of leaders, because everybody's leading in their individual areas. And it's amazing, because I think from babies upwards, you know, babies cry because they want the autonomy, but they can't tell you what they want to do. So they cry because they want to get down from the high chair. They want their food. They don't want their food, whatever it may be. And I think from that then onwards, we're sort of hardwired to want autonomy. Nobody really likes being told what to do. We like being asked what we think we should do. We like being told what a problem is and being asked to solve it. We don't like being told, here's the solution, now go and do it. That's not a way to inspire your team. The way to inspire your team is to give them autonomy.
And I never knew this about you or Ella. So I think you should be blogging about this or drafting something about this, write an essay about it, as you have been influenced by Turn the Ship Around. How do you make sure that you don't have people going in, 20 different directions, that they are, there is some holistic vision, whether it's the North Star, the business goal or such?
Because the whole thing relies on communication. And when you break the communication down, actually language is super, super important. And keeping these things simple, I think, is also really, really important. So say I report into you, Carol, and I come to you and I say, I have done X, Y, Z. If I come to you and say, I have done this, that's no good, right? The whole chain of communication is broken down because it hasn't given you the opportunity to say, have you thought about this? Or have you thought about that? Or actually, someone else is doing this. Or no, I don't think you should do whatever it may be. But if I come to you and say, Carol, I intend to do X, Y, Z, you could go, that's very interesting. Tell me more about that. And then I go, well, this is what we're doing. And you could build on that and say, have you considered X, Y, Z? And I'm like, oh, no, I haven't. That's a great idea. Tell you what, I'll go and do that, and then I'll come back, and you're brilliant. Or you could just say, that's a fantastic idea. Crack on. If I've come to you and you've said that to me, I leave thinking, I feel 10 feet tall. This is amazing. You know, and that's how it works. But so there's a language around it, and it relies on communication, because you're right. And it also relies on the right structure, you know, the right strategy, everyone having clarity. Otherwise, you can get everyone running around like headless chickens, and then it falls apart.
And who's responsible for the structure and the clarity? Is that you?
Yeah, me and the senior team, I would say. So the structure of the team, the buck stops with me in terms of getting the right resource, and my HR director, who's called head of keeping people happy.
Okay.
So it relies on a few things, but building the strategy, we believe that the whole team should be involved in building the strategy, because then it's co-created. But there are lots of things that kind of are the pillars, I suppose, of autonomy. But when you've got those in place and you've got the right team, you're off at the races.
Yeah, that's why you're doing so well. As we're winding down, I would love you, and you've given some amazing insights, but if you had a social entrepreneur come to you, they've got an idea, maybe their company's got 5 or 10 people in it, maybe it's, you know, $1 million in sales or something, and they want to be purpose at the center. They want to be purposeful. What suggestions would you give them? Like, God, these are the three things that you really should think about.
I would say take the free B impact assessment from B Corp. It's free. You don't have to share it with anybody. Start measuring your company. You can make improvements from it, so it will give you a free sustainability plan. Do it, but do it for the right reasons. Don't go down this path just to sell more stuff or increase your bottom line. That may well be a consequence, probably will be a consequence of doing it, but it's not inspiring. Engage your team through the whole process. And I would say the thing that has been most inspiring and the most changed through me has been realizing that my impact or your impact is wider than just your company. I feel a CEO's responsibility now extends beyond the company that they are running.
That's a great, great point. So this has been a wonderful conversation. I've learned so much about you as a leader, and as your love for the B Corp movement too. That comes through very, very clear. But the fact that you're also balancing your love for Ella's and your mission, which is to truly create a healthy relationship with food for babies and toddlers. And so what, is there anything else, Mark, that you'd just like to say as we close this?
Well, it'd be great to have your company as part of the B Corp movement, Carol.
Okay, well, we're gonna take a look at it. Absolutely.
But apart from that, no, it's been a real pleasure speaking to you. Yeah, it's been great. Thank you for letting me talk about my passions.
Yeah, you know, what I love, because I often see you got a founder, and the founder is passionate, and they have, you know, there's that vision, there's that mountain that they're going to climb. And then you get, then they sell, and then you get someone, a new CEO, and they're a numbers guy or gal. They don't have that passion. And what's extraordinary with you is that you have a passion as strong as Paul's, but it's different. It's still committed to Ella's and your purpose, but you're also saying, I want this ecosystem, to your point, that a CEO has a responsibility, not just with their company and their supply chain, but even bigger. So I want to give you a good shout out. We'll promote the heck out of this. And one of the great things about doing my podcast is that I get to make new friends, and then I give speeches all over the world, so I can get to put you in the speech and say, hey, I just talked to Mark. We had this amazing conversation. And by the way, the B Corp movement is truly, I love the fact that Natura is a B Corp. And I got to visit Natura when I was in Brazil many years ago. And they have, by the way, they've got amethysts and they've got all these incredible stones in the corners of their manufacturing plant for people to be like, be chill. But they're a great B Corp. And they bought Avon. So they may become, I know that the folks from Danone wanted to say, we don't want to be the largest B Corp. We want with somebody to be even bigger. So your passion for it's going to be helpful. And so thank you so much for the conversation. I just want to say to our listeners, that I'm passionate about purpose and the power of purpose. And so I hope that you really enjoyed this conversation. Please go to where you rate podcasts so that we can, whether it's iTunes or other places, so we can get higher in the business a list of the best podcasts, because we want all business, as Mark said, to truly embrace a greater purpose. And the other thing is, I want to just say to my listeners that we have our second edition ebook out, which is my top 25 podcasts of the previous about 18 months. This one will be in the third edition, Mark. So it's a bite-sizable reviews of conversations, but they all have the links to the full conversation. So in today's crazy world where everybody's busy, they've got the shorthand and they've got the longhand. So that's Purpose 360 ebook. You can go to our website. It's purposecollaborative.com or Carol Cohn on Purpose. We've got two URLs you can use. And please be intentional, listeners, to what you're doing with your companies, no matter where you sit. And please, I always am asking you to think of the answer to this question: what is the power of your purpose? So thank you, Mark. This has been a great conversation. Thank you to my avid listeners. Please share this with others. And truly, truly, you'll have, from all the learnings, you'll have a more you'll be much more facile and successful in the answer to what is the power of your purpose. So thank you very much, and have a great day.